Chapter 4, Tears. With some effort of will, I impose calm on my mind. It does not create thoughts anymore. Those which appear immediately vanish like small clouds in the Indian sky. I am gazing intently on the saint, looking into his great, widely opened, dark eyes. And suddenly I begin to understand. How can I express in our earthly language what exactly I do understand? How shall I tell in words, based on the common ideas and experiences of ordinary people who are creating and molding our language, these higher and more subtle things? May I say that I understand that Maharshi's life is not concentrated on this, our earthly plane, that it extends far beyond our world, that he contemplates a different and real world, a world not subject to storms and changes, that he is a torch of light before the throne of the Most High, shedding its rays all around, that he is like the incense smoke constantly rising towards the blue sky, which we see through the temple roof, that his eyes, just now looking at me, seem to convey. No, I'm unable to say anything more. I cannot even think. I only feel a stream of tears upon my face. They are abundant and serene. They flow silently. It is not suffering, regret, or repentance that is their source. I do not know how to name their cause. And through these tears, I look at the Master. He knows full well their origin. His serious, almost solemn face expresses endless understanding and friendship and glows with inner light, which makes it so different from all other human faces. In the light of his profound gaze, I suddenly understand the reason and purpose of my tears. Yes, I see at last. The sudden illumination is too strong to allow immediate belief in the truth of the seen. Is this really possible? Can it be possible? But Maharshi's eyes seem to bring a confirmation of it. I can only say that there are moments of inner experience so important, so fraught with consequences, that they may influence not only one but many incarnations. There are stains which have to be washed out before more light can be seen. No water from an earthly vessel can wash them out, can purify the soul. It may be that the only vessel which can serve this purpose is the heart, the only water, a stream of tears, peace that passeth all human understanding. Similar meditations continue for a few more days and are followed by another stage. Tears give way to an inner quietude and a feeling of inexpressible, indescribable happiness. This inner mood is independent of any outward condition. Neither the pain of the limbs, which is often annoying when one has been sitting for several hours in the same position, nor the troublesome black mosquitoes, nor the trying heat can disturb this inner peace. This state lasts as long as I do not allow the mind to create new thoughts. But as soon as the concentration ceases, peace also vanishes. But once more the world with its problems steps in. Worries, anxieties, expectations appear again. But once we have discovered the secret of this experience, the door to its repetition is opened. We can recover it at will. I am quite aware that the assistance of the Master is a most important factor in these first glimpses of the supramental consciousness. I do not think he is definitely and actively intervening. But his presence, his constant radiation, spontaneously brings about this effect. I look at the people gathered in the temple hall. Brahmins and outcasts, Europeans and Americans, men and women, the old, the young, and small children. All are happy here at the feet of the saint. Everyone feels this happiness according to his own capacity and degree of receptivity. The learned Brahmin may think that by being here, he is nearer to liberation from the wheels of births and deaths. The black Dravidian farmer trusts that the crops on his small rice field will be richer after his visit to the ashram to pay homage at the feet of the rishi. An American may hope to find a salvation and the bliss of samadhi. And an artist, a former film star from North India, beautiful in her silver grey sari, may already feel herself to be in swarg, the Hindu paradise. And to me it seems that the thick mist covering the horizon is slowly becoming less dense, that the day is nearing when nothing will stand anymore between me and reality. I also see in these moments the tremendous amount of labor ahead of me. I see that I am short of so many of the necessary qualifications. But this sight does not bring depression as it usually did before. The experienced peace being out of time, the question when and how does not arise. I remember Maharshi's words in answer to a similar question. I read them lately and they seem to confirm my feeling. Quote, "The real self is all. It is omnipresent, hence always with us. To live in it is realization." End of quote.